Hi, welcome to
Tradition!
I'm your host, Tom Hirsch, and welcome to Episode 5 of Traditions. I diverged a bit in Episode 4, talking about premarital counseling. Considering it a tradition might have been a bit of a stretch, but I did feel it was important information to share. Judging from audience response, I'm guessing many of you agreed with me, and thank you. I'll probably do it again. Today we are going to concentrate on wedding traditions, and the part of the world selected for this discussion is located on the far eastern shore of the Mediterranean Sea, the country of Israel. Our Jewish brothers and sisters know how to celebrate and have a good time. The Jewish weddings I've attended have been fun from the moment you cross the threshold, while thoroughly steeped in culture and symbolic ritual. And before I go too much further, I'll take a moment to explain and apologize if some pronunciation slips into this broadcast. I absolutely understand, given my last name of Hirsch, that some folks expect to see me with a black beard, wearing a payet, with the ability to speak fluent Hebrew. Not so. I love my Jewish friends and I'm fond of their way of life, and have a healthy respect for their culture. But I was born and raised a Roman Catholic, and while my appreciation for Judaism is great, my understanding of the culture and language is minimal. Thus, I've tried to do my homework, so hopefully what follows demonstrates my respect for the traditions we're going to discuss. My studies led me to understand there are two major classifications of European Jews. The Ashkenazim, or Germanics, Ashkenaz meaning Germany in medieval Hebrew, denoting their central European base, and the Sephardim, or Hispanics, Sephard meaning Hispanic or Iberia in Hebrew, denoting their Spanish or Portuguese heritage. According to these same tomes, although the first American Jews were Sephardic, the Jewish ethnic identity most readily recognized in North America today originated in medieval Germany. Some of the more well-known members of Ashkenazi Judaism were folks like Albert Einstein, Gertrude Stein, Carl Sagan, Steven Spielberg, and Scarlett Johansson, along with three current members of the United States Supreme Court, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Stephen Breyer, and Elena Kagan. There are many Jewish wedding traditions to be aware of when planning your special day. We'll discuss some of the more common ones to help you get started. Depending on the depth of your religion and culture, you may wish to incorporate some of these into your wedding. Governed by your subculture and level of orthodoxy, and whether or not you are marrying a fellow Jew, these traditions may be optional or mandatory. You'll want to be sure to fully review your ceremony with a rabbi to decide the best plan for you, your future spouse, and your family, and discuss any reception traditions with your family members as well. So much for the background. Let's get into the traditions. Starting at the beginning and working all the way through the wedding ceremony, there are 16 we'll consider. The first is called breaking the plate. Just as a broken plate is difficult to mend, brides and grooms-to-be are never meant to go back to their original status. Thus, to this day, the mothers of the bride and groom often break a plate as part of the engagement. Following the act, everyone knows both sides of the family are ready to proceed with the marriage, and there's nothing barring the way. Then comes the shomer and shomeret. A bride and groom are considered and treated as a king and queen, not just for the big day, but for the entire week leading up to the wedding. Just as royalty have handmaidens or guards so they're never left alone, a bride and groom should always be with a friend or family member, designated as their chaumerette for a woman and chaumer for a man. A chaumerette or chaumer ensures you're taken care of and keeps you calm and distracted from any pre-wedding stress. Who wouldn't want one? Number three is the aufruf. On the Shabbat prior to the wedding, a Jewish couple may partake in an aufruf, which means calling up in Yiddish. Here, either the groom or the couple together are called up to recite an aleiah, or special blessing recited before and after the reading of the Torah. The rabbi then blesses the couple and their impending union. Guests may toss candy to celebrate, and there may be a small reception following. Fasting is number four. As on Yom Kippur, then depending on their beliefs, some Jewish couples fast on the day of their wedding to atone for their sins. The couple may eat again after the wedding ceremony, typically during the Yachud. More on that later. Number five is head coverings. At the wedding ceremony, all male guests, Jewish or not, cover their heads with a yarmulke. It's a sign of respect. Traditionally, married women cover their hair as well, usually with a lace head covering. Etiquette dictates the bridal couple provides the head coverings at the ceremony, so guests don't have to bring their own. Number six, you may see it and you may not. It's separate seating. Men and women might be required to sit separately during the ceremony, and sometimes even the reception as well. This is a highly orthodox practice and subject to much discord as recently as the mid-20th century. You may see a partition called a matriza set up to divide the genders. At some receptions, there may even be separate dancing with either two dance floors or a matriza dividing the single dance floor into men and women's side. Number seven is the bedeckin. One of the most exciting moments in a traditional Orthodox Jewish wedding is the bedeckin, or the veiling ceremony. Often, it's when the groom may be seeing the bride for the first time. The groom and his male friends and relatives make a joyful procession to the bride, who sits on a throne surrounded by female loved ones. As guests sing and dance, the groom places a veil over the bride's face. This tradition hails from the story of Jacob, who intended to marry Rachel, but was tricked into marrying her sister Leah. The reference in that is Genesis 28, verses 10 to 32. So now, Jewish grooms double-check to make sure they're marrying the girl of their dreams. Number eight, the ketubah, a most important Jewish wedding tradition, is the signing of the ketubah, or marriage contract. This signing ceremony is traditionally held shortly before the actual wedding. The couple chooses two witnesses to sign with them. A rabbi and close family members are also present for this important moment. The signed ketubah is frequently displayed during the wedding ceremony. Number nine is the chuppah, or wedding canopy, and it's among the most important and widely recognized Jewish wedding traditions. It consists of a cloth, sometimes the prayer shawl, which we'll discuss later, supported by four poles, which may either stand on their own or be held by wedding party members or honored guests, who often process into the ceremony carrying the chuppah. It may be simple or elaborately decorated depending on the wishes of the couple and their families. And it represents the creation of a Jewish home and a show of hospitality to the assembled guests. During a Jewish wedding ceremony, the officiant and parents of the couple stand with the bridal couple under the chupa. The best man and maid of honor may also stand under, if desired. In Jewish wedding tradition, the processional is a bit different from what you'll see at a Christian ceremony. After the rabbi, the bride's and groom's grandparents are escorted down the aisle, followed by the groomsman and best man. The groom is then escorted by his parents, followed by the bridesmaid and the maid of honor. Finally, the bride is escorted by both of her parents. Just before arriving at the chupa, the custom of the bride circling the groom is a part of many modern weddings. Known as the hakafa, during the processional and before she reaches the chupa, she walks in a circle around the groom either 3 or 7 times. The more usual custom of 7 circles has many explanations, including that there are 7 days in the week, and 7 aliyot on Shabbat. In addition, when a man takes a wife, appears in the Bible 7 times, and on Simchat Torah, the Torahs are carried around the synagogue 7 times. Lastly, there's a mystical teaching that the bride, encircling 7 times, enters 7 spheres of her husband's innermost being. One explanation for the basis of circling 3 times is based on the 3 times in Hosea 2:21 and 22, when God, in reassuring Israel, says, "And I will betroth you unto me." Another refers to a woman's 3 basic rights in marriage: food, clothing, and sex. In some instances, the couple circled each other. The bride might circle the groom 3 times, followed by the groom circling her 3 times, and then the couple makes 1 circle together. Increasingly, circling is being incorporated into Reform Jewish weddings, and even same-sex couples are adopting this ritual for their ceremonies. Number 12. The Shava Bracha are 7 blessings recited by the rabbi during the ceremony, one of the most important elements of a Jewish wedding. They're recited over a cup of wine during the latter part of the proceedings, and are usually recited in Hebrew, though they may be translated into English as well. They build in complexity, becoming more expansive in content and theme, and progressively unfold in praise of creation itself, the creation of human beings, the joy of the couple, the establishment of a household, and an ode to joy that links this individual celebration with the time when joy and gladness will be heard in every city and on every hill. It's believed that each time 2 people fall in love and marry, the world comes that much closer to perfection. The 7 blessings can be found in the full transcript of this show, available to you through our website, https://www.your-special-day.net/traditions. Number 13 brings us to the prayer shawl, or the talit. It's used in several ways during the Jewish wedding. A bride may give her groom a talit as a wedding gift. It may also serve as the cloth portion of the chuppah. And during the final blessings, the couple's parents may wrap the talit around the couple's shoulders as a symbol of unity and being surrounded by love. Perhaps the most well-known of all Jewish traditions is our number 14, the breaking of the glass. During the final moments of a wedding ceremony, the groom breaks a glass wrapped in a cloth to avoid injury with his right foot. The couple will then usually kiss, and guests shout, "Mazel tov," meaning congratulations. There are many conflicting reasons why this Jewish tradition takes place, but it's most commonly thought of as a reference to the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem, and teaches that in times of joy, we must always be cognizant that life also brings sadness and sorrow. It illustrates, like marriage, it is permanent, warns us that love, like glass, is fragile and must be protected, and helps us remember that the world, too, is broken, and that with acts of love, we can help make it whole again. More recently, both members of the couple, including same-sex couples, have chosen to break a glass. A thorough discussion of the significance behind this tradition can be found at https://www.shabad.org. Shabad is C-H-A-B-A-D. www.shabad.org. Number 15, the Yichud, referred to earlier. It refers to seclusion, which takes place immediately after the wedding ceremony. According to tradition, the newlyweds are secluded from their guests for a period of time after the ceremony. At one time in the past, this was where the marriage was consummated, but nowadays, the couple will simply enjoy some quiet time alone together and food. Remember the fasting before greeting their loved ones at the reception. Musical tribute. As I said at the outset, if anybody knows how to have a good time at a celebration, it's the Jewish community. There are two musical traditions you can almost count on hearing. Well, one for sure, at a Jewish wedding reception. The Hora danced to the tune of Hava Negila. One of the highlights of Jewish wedding traditions, this joyful dance usually takes place either immediately after the newlyweds enter the reception or after their first dance. As the music plays, guests dance in circles, and the couple seated on chairs and are hoisted into the air, where they may hold either side of a handkerchief or cloth napkin, if they can do so without falling out of the chair. Just in case you're wondering, as a small aside, what does Hava Nagila mean? It's Hebrew for let us rejoice, and is an Israeli folk song traditionally sung at Jewish celebrations. It's perhaps the first modern Israeli folk song in the Hebrew language that has become a staple of band performers at Jewish weddings and mitzvah celebrations. Another traditional dance you might see during a reception is the Misinkatanz, which occurs when the last child of the family is married. The parents of the child sit on chairs and stay on the floor, and the mother wears a floral crown. Guests dance around the parents and congratulate them on the special occasion. The parents are also gifted with ceremonial brooms, signifying a clean sweep of the house, with the last of their children out and on their own. This may be done for the parents of the bride, the groom, or both, depending on if they're the last in the family to be married. If you'd like to read an outstanding thesis on the ritualistic significance of the steps of Jewish betrothal and marriage as they relate to Old Testament teachings and traditions, I refer you to an article titled Jewish Wedding Customs and the Bride of Messiah by Glenn Kay. You can find it at this website, http://messianicfellowship.50webs, that's the number 50webs, W-E-B-S, .com/wedding.html. I'll repeat that. It's http://messianicfellowship.50webs.com/wedding.html. Now let's spend a few minutes viewing the Jewish wedding from the perspective of an honored guest. If you're wondering what to expect, follow these tips, and you're bound to have the time of your life, or at least enjoy the party of a lifetime, as the Israelis know how to do it right. First, come hungry. There's every good chance that you're going to eat like you've never eaten before. Then get out your checkbook. Ditch the Hallmark card. The logic behind this is that you're symbolically paying for your meal. Israelis don't have the same tradition that Western countries follow, where the family of the bride pays for the wedding. So your present is more like chipping in and helping the happy couple pay for the grossly expensive party than giving a personal gift towards their future. Be prepared to see the couple before the ceremony. Forget any superstitions you may be familiar with. Except for devoutly religious couples, Israeli brides and grooms often pose for wedding photos in the afternoon before the ceremony. That means they won't miss any of the post-chuppah reception, maximizing their dance and party time. Many brides and grooms also show up during appetizers to greet their guests, because who doesn't want to enjoy every part of their own wedding? Number 4, prepare for the traditional to meet the untraditional. Religious couples may request that you abide by a modest dress code, and their weddings often have the gender-separated dancing and sometimes dining that we discussed before. But you never know really what to expect. With Israeli millennials, you can count on all kinds of wacky surprises. For instance, a formal ceremony followed by a pool party at a villa, keeping it traditional yet casual at the same time. Pucker up, and if you're not a germaphobe, drink from the communal cup. As soon as the groom smashes the glass and the ceremony ends, it's not uncommon for a DJ to play a popular modern Israeli song at just brain-ringing volume. You also may find yourself trampled by the wave of guests rushing up to the chuppah to kiss the newly married couple. Number 6, give your feet a breather and loosen your tie. It's not at all uncommon to see one person in a cocktail dress with heels and another in shorts and flip-flops. Many Israeli grooms don't even wear a tie or a suit jacket. At the very least, bring along your flip-flops for dancing. Loosening your tie will help you fit in with the crowd and make you feel a whole lot more comfortable. And leave your sweet tooth at home, largely because what many Westerners think of as the best part of the wedding, the cake, just isn't a custom here. Number 8, get ready to imbibe and leave your cash at home. Drinks are typically served all night, free of charge. And you might even get bottles of soda, wine, and even vodka on the table, allowing you to relax and feel like a guest instead of a paying customer lining up to buy watered-down drinks. Just make sure you have a designated driver to help you get home safely at the end of the night, which could end up being quite late. And you might even want to invest in a pair of earplugs. Carry a pair in your pocket and pop them in when it becomes too much, or just enjoy the ringing in your ears for the full day afterwards. Work on those dance moves. Israeli weddings are all about dancing. Best brush up on your moves before the big day, and we aren't talking about the electric slide here. Learn some classic Israeli wedding dances, like the hora, and perfect that perplexing go-to Israeli dance move that involves rocking out while alternately lifting your forearms up to chest level, palms open and exposed. And finally, get your smile on. Israeli weddings are big, happy family affairs. You won't find the phrase "no children" on an Israeli wedding invitation, which, by the way, is customarily handed out only a few weeks or days before the wedding. If Israelis do one thing well, it's unabashedly showing their genuine happiness for their friends and family. Be prepared for a lot of smiles, laughs, and good times. And that's traditions for today. Thank you so much for being part of the show. We'd really like to hear from you with your thoughts and ideas about this or any other show, past or future. Send us a note at feedback@yourspecialday2.com. That's an email address, feedback@yourspecialday2.com. If you'd like a printed transcript of today's show, you can download it at our website, https://www.your-special-day.net/traditions. Or you can send a request to me at the feedback email address I just gave you, and I'll be happy to return the transcript to you immediately. Remember also that the seven blessings of the Shava Bracha are included at the end of that transcript. Finally, click on the subscribe button back where you launched this podcast to be sure you're notified of new episodes as soon as they're released. Those are traditions for today, sponsored by Your Special Day, a non-denominational wedding officiant service based in Palm Harbor, Florida. For more information about Your Special Day, visit their website at www.your-special-day.net. I invite your thoughts and comments on today's show or any show from the past. Email your comments to feedback@yourspecialday2.com. You're also encouraged to subscribe to this and all future shows by clicking on the subscribe button below. I'm Tom Hirsch. Stay happy, stay healthy, stay wise.
's show is brought to you by Your Special Day, a non-denominational wedding officiant service located in Palm Harbor, Florida. Your Special Day offers small, intimate weddings where the ceremony is crafted especially for you and approved by you well in advance of your day. Eloping? Destination wedding? No time to plan? Florida is renowned for its beautiful beaches, and waterfront ceremonies are common all up and down the coast. But special county permits apply. We're familiar with the regulations and happy to help. Bring us your dreams. We'll help make them reality. From custom-written ceremonies to writing your own vows, we're here to make your special day truly special indeed. Visit our website at www.your-special-day.net or call 727-533-5433 today for more information about our service, pricing, and availability. Call 727-533-5433. Call now.